Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. Yes, it's the Weekly Worldview. It's the whole show where I start off by saying a bunch of stuff that I'm used to saying so that I don't get distracted and I can focus on doing the show. So I say the same thing every week just so that I can get prepared and be focused. But this week, it's going to be different. I'm going to start out with something different. Yes, we go first to the food and travel file here at the Weekly Worldview. So this is a new segment. We're starting a new year, and we're starting it right. And we're starting it in November, which is also a novel idea. From the food and travel file here at the Weekly Worldview, the New York Post reports that an Indonesian airliner was delayed for an hour on the tarmac after passengers complained of an overpowering stench. Yes, the pilot and air traffic controllers wavered as to whether or not the plane should take off or whether it should not. And passengers grabbed the flight attendants by their collars and said, "Please, no, we can't take off. Do you smell it? Can you smell it? Can you smell that?" The airline eventually agreed to remove from the hold approximately 2 tons. Approximately 2 tons of the Asian delicacy durian. That's right. It's a fruit is what it is. And it's considered a delicacy across Asia. But the smell, I've smelt it myself, folks. And I can tell you that it'll get your attention at the very least. Let's see. We have food writer Richard Sterling has described the odor of durian. It's the only fruit with an odor. Other fruits have a smell. Durian has an odor. He says that the odor is turpentine and onions garnished with a gym sock. So they removed the 2 tons of durian and the plane was able to take off finally. By the way, it's illegal in some countries to have durian on the premises. In some public transportation facilities, hotels, and it's banned on some planes. That's right. So the Indonesians with the durian fruit on the plane from the food and travel file here at the Weekly Worldview. As we start a new year with a new brand of the Weekly Worldview where we actually have a food and travel file. There we have it. All right. Now, we'll move on. Well, I should start. This is a historic week, as I'm sure you're all aware. Actually, most of you may not be aware, so I'll bring you up to speed. Two anniversaries occurred over this past week. Well, one anniversary over the past week. The anniversary of the Night of Broken Glass in Germany, when Jewish shops were looted en masse, and Jews were rounded up for the first time in earnest by the Nazi regime. In Nazi Germany. That was last week. Today, November 11th, Veterans Day, number one. Number two, the anniversary of the World War I armistice, 11-11-18, as a matter of fact. It is the centenary of the armistice between the World War, the armistice that breached the World War, World War I and World War II. And so there. Let's see, Veterans Day. Do I do the obligatory? I want to thank all you veterans out there. Should I do that? Actually, it is Veterans Day, and I want to thank some of you veterans. I want to thank some of you out there, the ones who served with honor and distinction, and especially the heroes who did heroic things, and those who were wounded, and of course to the families and friends of those who were killed. I want to thank you. But some of you veterans were slackers and losers and misfits, and you know who you are. And to you, I don't really want to say anything. Just Tell your story walking, all right? It's Veterans Day. You should be lucky. Now, someone might buy you a drink or a cup of coffee or something. All right. So there. But to all you heroes and those who were wounded and killed, we do thank you, and we wish God's blessings upon you. Yeah. Now, let's go back to Kristallnacht, the night of broken glass in Germany, as we look back. I believe it was 1939, I think. Kristallnacht was the night that the nationalist, anti-Semitic socialists, homosexualists, by the way, spiritualist Nazis, began their reign of terror. And so let's just take a moment to reflect. Here, in 2018, we look around the world, we see that anti-Semitism is on the rise. Nationalism is on the rise. So everything that's good about nationalism, everything that's bad about nationalism. Me, myself, I'm not comfortable with the term nationalist. I don't like it. I know Donald Trump said he's a nationalist, and that makes like everyone who voted for him, now you're all nationalists. But be careful with that one. That's all I got to say. Be careful with that one. Socialism is on the rise. Whether anyone wants to admit it or not, the socialists won a giant victory in the election this past, whenever it was, recently. Socialism's on the rise, anti-Semitism's on the rise, nationalism's on the rise. And here's the thing about the homosexualists, is back when it was the Nazis, they had to kind of keep it quiet. They weren't public with that whole pink swastika element of their... If you ever want to read a book that's really interesting and well-documented and well-researched, read The Pink Swastika. It's all about the homosexual pederasts who were at the highest ranks of power within the Nazi Party. But here's the thing. As we survey civilization circa 2018 and compare it to the night of the broken glass, there is a previously unknown level of lawlessness, and I speak specifically about the homosexualists. They're open, they're out, they're proud. In Colorado, they're the governor. Yeah, we have a first man now in Colorado. A first man, he's the husband of the governor. And they've adopted children. I want to throw up, it's disgusting. Anyway, and by the way, our governor is not only a homosexualist, he's also a socialist. I don't know about anti-Semitism, and I don't think he's a nationalist, but he's batting 500 in the you scare the hell out of me batting average there, Governor. I forget what his name is. I also forget the name of the guy who ran against him because nobody ever saw the guy. But there's this. So back during the night of the broken glass, we had the anti-Semitism, the nationalism, the socialism. Add to that mix now, percolating up. And all these things are on the rise now. All these things are bubbling, festering just below the surface. The boil is about to erupt. It feels like sometimes. Add to that, out, open, proud, militant homosexualism. Oh, and by the way, and child killing, add to that. The legalized murder of approximately 1 billion people since the liberalization of... And so what do you think the next World War is going to look like? I think it's going to look worse than World War II. I was reading there were about 7,200 deaths a day attributed to war in World War I. 7,200 a day. You take those same industrialized nations that were involved in World War I. How many innocent people are murdered every day in those same industrialized countries? It makes World War I look like just incidental collateral damage, 7,200 a day. They didn't even know how to kill people back then. If they could fast forward in time and come now and visit, we can show you how to kill people on an industrial scale. In fact, we could teach the Nazis who participated in Kristallnacht a thing or two about industrialized mass murder. They didn't even have they didn't even have it figured out to the 10th degree of what we have now. So there is our survey of civilization circa 2018. We'll go to the war file, I said, in Pakistan. We reported that Asia Bibi was acquitted after being on death row in Pakistan for 8 years for blasphemy, the crime of blasphemy. Her crime, by the way, was being a Christian in Pakistan and not being willing to shut up completely about it. She let it slip once or twice. She was on death row. Anyway, she, as far as we know, she remains somewhere in Pakistan. Her whereabouts are unknown. The government there says that her whereabouts are a secret and they are keeping her safe. There continue to be demands by radical Islamists that she be publicly executed as she sits terrified somewhere, scared, in Pakistan. So the Islamists, by the way, are our generation's version of the Nazis. Islamists are anti-Semitic. They're socialist, and they're nationalist in the sense that they want Islam to be the politically governing rule. They want Sharia, they want Islam. So they're practically Nazis, but without the swastika. And they're a bunch of pederasts, by the way, with the raping of the young boys and all that. Anyway, so we're here at the Weekly Worldview. We're in the bowels here at the McBurney compound in the boiler room. Oh, where, by the way, when we start the show, we have to turn the boiler off, which means once the boiler's turned off, you have to get right to it because it's going to be cold here in Colorado tonight. It's November. It's cold. It's going to be cold. It's going to be, yeah, very. So I walk into my dry cleaners. We chit-chat, just a little chit-chat. And he asked, so you got at the dry cleaners, you got the girl at the front desk. She works there. Probably a member of the family of the old guy who owns the place, who's sitting over on the side pontificating, apparently. I believe he was pontificating before I walked in. I heard dribs and drabs of what sounded like pontification as I walked in to pick up my laundry. And chit-chat, it's going to be cold. He asked me, is your house winterized? I said, you know, I think we're in good shape. Boiler's working. The windows are all. Within 30 seconds, he's telling me how the government controls the weather with chemtrails. This is my dry cleaner. I was just chit-chatting about the weather. Within 30 seconds, he's like, the chemtrail, you know, they control the weather, the government. I said, the government, huh? I said, I used to work for the government. If they controlled the weather, they didn't do a very good job of it. We slept outside. It was cold a lot. You'd think if they were controlling the weather, when they had 80,000 troops in the field, they would arrange for some good weather. Ah, no, 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 no. They don't control the weather to be nice to anybody, he told me. He said, what do you think of the chemtrails? I said, I think you and Alex Jones are smoking chemtrails, buddy. And I love this guy. He's a great guy. Great dry cleaner. They haven't ruined any of our clothes, have they? Have they ruined anything? That's something. Then 3 years, a dry cleaner doesn't ruin any of your clothes. You stay there. Even if he's chemtrails, whack job, listens to Alex Jones, I'm still going to bring my laundry there. But he says to me, I say to him, I think you and Alex Jones are smoking chemtrails. The girl at the front desk laughed so loud that it hurt my ears. She was like, I can tell the poor girl has to suffer through. I can imagine what this poor girl suffers through, and she's probably the daughter or the niece. A wonderful Korean family owns this dry cleaner. Anyway, I'm just sure what she has to sit through. And they're Christians. They're overtly Christian, and I love them, and he's nuts. What can I say? It's just not what you expect when you go to your dry cleaners, you know? You don't expect to have to get into a conversation like that, but there I was with the chemtrails. What's the deal? You know what I think it is? I think that when human beings become too comfortable, they tend to have a guilt complex. I think we all have a guilt complex because we all know we're sinful and we're fallen and that we don't deserve the blessings that God gives us. We don't deserve it. And deep down, we know it. Especially Christians, we know it. And so if you sit around with too much time on your hands long enough, you start looking for things to feel bad about. And then eventually you start looking for things to be scared of. And after a while, you become, well, I mean, not to put too fine a point on it, but you can kind of go nuts. That's why everybody wants a piece of the action. Everybody needs a main attraction. I got what everybody needs. Satisfaction guarantees. Everybody wants a piece of the action. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, and we're starting a new year. Turning over a new year, a new leaf here in the new year. It's November 11th. It's a fiscal year thing. If you're not a businessman, you might not understand. Let's go to the politics file, where Axios is reporting that about half of Americans say they have lost faith in democracy. That's right. Axios, If you've not had a chance, you should bump over to the Axios website. That's if you're old school like I am and you go to websites. Axios is the millennial. It's a news organization designed for millennials. Very short attention span, very limited vocabulary, very easy to understand, and heavy on the polling. They're very heavy on the polling over there at Axios. So they did their Survey Monkey for the week so that they could write a story about it. And 51% of Americans say they have faith in democracy, meaning that about 49%, about half people have lost faith in democracy. 37% come right out and say they've lost faith in democracy. And why does it matter? Axios asks, which by the way, they ask for every. They do like a one paragraph and then they're like, why does it matter? Because if you're a millennial, you don't know why anything matters. If you've matriculated in the government schools, you don't know where you're from. You don't know where you're going. You don't know if there are any cultural facts that upon which we can all agree. You may not even know if you're a boy or a girl. You may not know if it's possible for you to believe you're a boy or a girl or to actually be a boy or a girl. So if you're a millennial, you don't know why the hell anything matters. And so they say why it matters. They say that this fact that about half of America has lost faith in democracy, at least according to their SurveyMonkey poll, they say it suggests that people doubt the very foundation of American society. So, and if you're a millennial, you don't have any doubt that the foundation of American society is democracy. But if you're not a millennial and you have half a brain, you look at that and you're like, really? Is democracy the foundation of American society? Is that, I mean, it is one of the popular humanist themes of the late 18th century that was a part of the form of government that our founding fathers came up with. But I think to call it the foundation of American society is a bit of an overstatement, a gross overstatement. You know, there used to be liberty, honor, justice. These were the foundations of American society. Honor and respect for God and the Bible. Those were parts of the foundations. Democracy It was a little bitty part there at the beginning because the founding fathers were, well, they were as prone to humanist errors as anyone else, and they put that one right there in the beginning. But to call it the very foundation of American society is a bit of a stretch. But at Axios, if you're a millennial, you don't know why, you don't know how, you don't even know why you're reading the news. You're reading it because you saw there was a SurveyMonkey poll, and so that gets. Millennials are attracted to the SurveyMonkey, I guess. I don't know. All right, so half of the country has lost faith in democracy. Well, I guess the poll just says that only 51% say they still have faith in democracy, which, if you're able to do math, would lead you to believe about half of the people don't. So I guess we could say we're winning. As you know, I'm an anti-Democrat. That's big D and little d. I'm against democracy, whether you're a member of the Democrat Party or if you just support the idea that you have enough brains and wisdom to vote for who rules over me. You see, I don't presume to have enough brains or wisdom to think that I have the right to vote for who rules over you. And I think the same of you, just so you know. It's not that I don't like you. It's just that I don't think you should be voting for who rules over me. And I also don't think that men have the authority to create laws. I don't know. I don't think so. I'm sorry. And I appreciate everyone's efforts. I mean, I can understand why you feel compelled. After all, you're extremely comfortable. You're so comfortable you don't know what to do with yourselves. So you start writing laws and creating laws. Laws should be discovered and not created. And for whoever it was who wrote the review of my show on iTunes, yes, I'm stealing that from Bob Enyart. And I will admit that he said it first, and he may have said it better, but I'm going to keep saying it just in case there's people out there who might not have heard it from him. Maybe even a millennial or two. Get through to some of those. How about that? All right, now we move from the politics file and the survey monkey, that whole thing. We move now to the Our Sacred Democracy file. This is from NBC News reporting on Our Sacred Democracy. A Nevada brothel owner who died after fashioning himself as a Donald Trump-style Republican candidate has won the election in Nevada. That's right. He won for the legislative, whatever. He's in the House of Representatives there in Nevada. He was number one. He was a brothel owner. Okay, let that sink in for just a second. Number two, he was dead at the time of the election. Number three, he won the election as part of Our Sacred Democracy. This brothel owner, basically the guy ran a whorehouse. He spent 4 days before he died partying, celebrating his 72nd birthday. And then he was found dead. His body was found in the same room where NBA player Lamar Odom was found dead back in 2015. There's a blast from the past. Do you remember that? He said, "'Tis extremely attractive." Audio engine. You don't remember Lamar Odom dying at the whorehouse? No. He's a basketball player. Doesn't matter. No one else in the audience knows who he was either. Anyway, let's see. So this fellow who ran a whorehouse, he ran as a Republican. He earned the backing of Sheriff Joe Arpaio, Trump associate Roger Stone, and tax cut activist Grover Norquist. Okay. So, yeah, Grover Norquist. Who would have thought? Anyway, the thing that makes this such a sacred part of our democracy is that the guy who owned the whorehouse was the conservative in the race. Proving that conservatism, it just ain't what it used to be. I mean, it used to be that running a whorehouse, that disbarred you from being a part of the conservative community. But the day before he died, Grover Norquist and Sheriff Joe were out there smoking cigars with him at the whorehouse that he owned before he died. Did I mention that he was dead when he won the election? All right, let's move on. We go further, deeper into the Our Sacred Democracy file. We go to Austin, Texas, where inmate number 232573 is now state representative for House District 72. That's right. He's now Representative Ron Reynolds. He ran unopposed for the District 27 House seat, and he won from his jail cell, serving a year-long sentence after a conviction on 5 misdemeanor counts of using a middleman to chase ambulances in order to solicit clients. He's an actual ambulance chaser. No, he's a lawyer. And he's seems like he's kind of lazy. He hired someone else to chase the ambulances. I think the thing is, in legal ethics, you're allowed to chase ambulances, but you have to do it yourself. And this guy hired someone else to chase the ambulances. So you think I'm making this up? So you wondered, I've always wondered, where does the term ambulance chaser come from? It's because they actually do that. This guy actually did it. And he's in jail for it. And from jail, he won election there in the state of Texas. KXAN News in Austin reports that the prisoner could miss the entire first year of the legislative session as he's sitting in jail. There you go. And so you wonder why people have lost faith in democracy. Okay, so if you're wondering why people have lost faith in democracy, well, let's move on to our Russian front file. Why do I call this the Russian front file? Because both sides are evil. And so it's difficult to root for anyone in this following story, but you pick out who's the good guys and who's the bad guys. The San Francisco Prop C, which was the homelessness tax, passed in San Francisco. Companies with more than $50 million in annual revenue will have to pay a 0.5% tax, which legislators assume will generate up to $300 million a year to do what? You guessed it, to combat homelessness. I like that. It'll generate, I shouldn't say I like it, I hate it. So here's the thing. You had the Salesforce CEO, an atheist, heathen scumbag of the first order, Mark Benioff. He endorsed the tax, right? In fact, CNBC reports Prop C had both vocal proponents and vehement detractors from within the tech industry. Salesforce CEO, socialist Mark Benioff, he wanted the tax. Even though Salesforce will pay up to $10 million, I'd like to keep a track of that because I'll bet they don't. Other people were against it. The CEO of Twitter and Square, Jack Dorsey, the founder of Zynga, Lyft, whatever. None of these people have any idea about what should be being done about homelessness. None of them have any clue on how to solve homelessness. They don't know why there is homelessness. They don't have the first inkling of how to combat homelessness, but they were both fighting for the tax and against the tax. It's like the Russian front. No matter who wins, everybody gets screwed or injured or even worse. But the tax passed. And listen to this. I love CNBC reports. Overall, more than 7 million people experience homelessness in San Francisco. So at any given time in San Francisco, there are approximately 7,000 people experiencing homelessness. And I must say, I've been to San Francisco, and there are few cities finer to go to if you want to experience homelessness. Because it's not cold outside, at least in November, so. So here you've got a bunch of people. None of them know how to help with the homeless problem. Yet they're fighting it out in a democratic contest in which nobody wins. If they raise the money and they give it to the homeless, they're going to hurt the homeless. The people they take the money from, the people they steal the money from at gunpoint, they're going to hurt those people. Those people now have to work harder, stay away from their families longer. In fact, they probably help the people they steal the money from. They probably help them on balance because they make them work harder and hard work. We've already established that people are too comfortable and that they need something to do. So maybe in an odd, strange twist of fate, maybe I end up supporting the people who want to raise the tax for the sake of the working people being robbed. Doug McBurney, welcome back, folks. It's so good to have you as we move forward in exposing the frailty and feeble-mindedness of the whole idea of democracy, the idea that the average person out there, the masses, have the accumulated intellect to choose what becomes the law and who becomes the rulers. It's utter foolishness. And I've never been a fan. That's all. I've always felt uncomfortable with it. And I'm more uncomfortable today than I was before the election. We go here now again to CNBC. Into the Our Sacred Democracy file. Where three red states have approved measures, or I should say in this last election, three red states. Now, do you know what a red state means? Oddly enough, that means Republican. I'm not sure how that happens. Because the commies were always the reds. But somehow, somewhere, I believe it was in 1992, the media switched. And they declared that the Republicans were red. No, it wasn't 92. I think it was 94. Or maybe it was 96. By the time Bob Dole came along, he was red. And I was confused. I was like, wait a minute. I'm not a big fan of Bob Dole, but he's not a communist. The Democrats were always the communists, so I think that's why they made the old switcheroo there. So anyway, CNBC reports that three red states have approved measures to expand Medicaid. Medicaid, by the way, is socialized medicine. Yes, socialism is what it is. I know the old people like it. Of course, well, wouldn't you like it, right? They give you some free drugs. Take you to the hospital, you're dying, they fix you up even though you're broke. Who's not going to like that? But it's socialism. Here's the bad thing about it. Well, one of the bad things is that they've robbed the wealth of an entire generation to pay for the sicknesses of old broke people today. Whereas if that little social hammock weren't in place, what do they call it? I'm sorry. They call it a social safety net. If that social safety net hadn't been in place, the old people would have saved some money. Because they would have, well, if you knew you were going to get it for free, you don't. But here's the thing, your grandchildren are robbed blind, okay? So it's thievery is what it is. They've stolen, they've robbed a generation blind to pay for the pills and the procedures for broke old people today. And not even just broke old people. Even rich old people get Medicare, for crying out loud. Medicaid. I'm sorry. Medicaid, Medicare. I get them confused all the time. Is Medicaid is which one's for the old people? I think that's Medicare. This is Medicaid. This is for broke, slacker young people. And this is for mothers without husbands. What do they call it? Single mothers? Or as I'm sorry. I don't mean to be disrespectful. Working families is what I meant. So the conservatives, well, here's the thing. This past election has secured a few things that are pretty much irreversible now. They've been secured in this past election. They haven't been secured, they've been cured. In the idea of a kiln, and once it's cured, it's solid and it's permanent, relatively. Three things were cured in this election. Number one, a sincere belief amongst conservatives that pre-existing conditions must be covered by health insurance. That is now Axios. Let me go back to Axios. I don't want to misquote them. Axios would call this the very foundations, part of the very foundation of American society is that pre-existing conditions must be covered by insurance. That's now part of the very foundation of the nation. Let's see. Second, it is now cured amongst the conservatives that the killing of unborn children is no longer a top-tier political issue. It's simply off the table. We knew it was making you all uncomfortable. We're very, very sorry. We'll shut up and we won't talk about it anymore. Not that we won't send out fundraising letters where we mention abortion, but as far as discussing any tactics or strategies to actually save one innocent child, we won't bring that up anymore. Sorry, we're sorry. We're sorry, we're sorry, we're sorry. Sir, may we have another? That is now part of the bedrock foundation of republicanism and conservatism, no longer a sincere strategy to end the murder of innocent children. Number three, this is now a part of the very foundation of America. A man can act like he's married to another man and even adopt children, and the subject of his lifestyle will not be an issue for conservatives. That was our governor here in Colorado, Jared Polis. Jared Polis, he's a man who acts like he's married to another man. He's an out, proud, aggressive homosexual and a socialist and a child killer. And the one thing that was never brought up in the race that he won against, I don't even know who he ran against. I think he may have ran unopposed. He could have been in jail with the guy in Texas and he would have won. Jared Polis. The one thing conservatives now will never bring up is any moral concern whatsoever. Whether you're adopting children, you're a homosexual adopting kids, you're out, you act like you're married to another man, it's certainly not an issue. You advocate for the killing of innocent children, we're not going to bring that up. In fact, let's just hand you the keys to the state house in the newly minted blue state of Colorado. And we wonder why people are losing faith in democracy. All right. I lost faith a long time ago. Thank you very much. I remember the first time I voted. I didn't even know what it was. They brought my ballot in the barracks. They said, you have to vote. I said, I don't even know who any of these people are. It wasn't George W. Bush. It was George Bush Sr. I was like, hey, I know that guy. I used to see him in commercials in Texas. He was a congressman. I'll vote for him. I was a complete empty head. I had no clue. They said, you got to vote. I voted. I felt like an idiot. I did not vote this last time. You know why? Because I feel like now at this point in my career, voting would be hypocritical. I don't think I'm qualified, and so I don't want to act like I'm qualified. And by the way, I don't think you're qualified, and I think I've made that perfectly clear. I don't want to hurt your feelings, but I'm sorry. All right, now we move from democracy. We move from a rather narrow parochial view of our sacred democracy to out into the world now, where we go to Holland, where the French press agency is reporting that Dutch authorities are now prosecuting a doctor for euthanizing an elderly woman. This is the first prosecution since the murder of lonely, old, unwanted people was legalized. I'm sorry, did I say it wrong? I meant euthanasia was legalized in Holland in 2002. Yes, so prosecutors say the doctor in this particular case of euthanasia may have overstepped the mark. The doctor, while she does regret the fact that she's being prosecuted. The doctor does say that she does welcome further guidance in her practice, or her euthanasia practice. She welcomes further guidance. She does protest the fact that she's being prosecuted. Here's what happened. The female doctor, she put a sleeping drug into the 74-year-old woman's coffee while her family was there. And this woman had been, well, she had been diagnosed with dementia. And at some point, she decided she wanted to be killed, apparently. Anyway, it got a little bit uncomfortable. Turns out the members of her family had to hold her down when she began to struggle until the doctor could administer the fatal drug. So the sleeping drug didn't take effect right away. So everyone had to hold grandma down while the doctor stuck a needle in her and killed her. And so prosecutors are saying she may have overstepped the mark. She may need further guidance in her practice of euthanasia. This is from the Decline and Fall file as we witness the slow motion suicide of Holland and the rest of Europe in general. And so why are they going to prosecute this doctor? Well, the government there in Holland wants to make sure that killing old, unwanted, lonely, maybe sick, expensive people, they want to make sure it looks as good as possible. And the idea of holding grandma down while the doctor's like hunting for a vein, trying to give her the fatal shot, that makes everyone a little bit uncomfortable. And it might make people uncomfortable with the idea of killing old people. And the last thing the Dutch government wants is for anyone to be uncomfortable with the idea of killing old, expensive, unwanted, lonely people who are just in the way anyways. It's better for them. And we're going to make sure that we do it in a very civilized fashion. We're not going to march through the streets throwing bricks through store windows anymore. That's so 1939. We know how to kill people now. Nice and clean, and we'll make it very comfortable. We'll even put people who do it improperly on trial, is what we'll do. All right. We move now into the domestic tranquility file here at the Weekly Worldview, where the French Press Association reports that after back-to-back mass shootings, they say Americans are growing somewhat numb, unable to express the appropriate amount of empathy for the masses of people being butchered and killed in the streets. So the most recent, the Borderline Bar. That's the most recent. So at the Borderline Bar, several people in the Borderline Bar had actually survived the mass shooting in Las Vegas last year. Several people in the bar had been through Las Vegas back in October of last year. AFP says, even in a country accustomed to gun massacres, the idea that some Americans had lived through not one but two attacks is startling. Governor Gavin Newsom says it's insane. It's insane, and insane is the only way to describe it, says Gavin Newsom, the newly elected governor of California. Gavin Newsom warns us that mass murder has become normalized. He says, normalized, he says. Gavin Newsom. All right. Do I have to bring up the point that Gavin Newsom has participated in the greatest mass murder in all of human history? I think I don't even have to bring it up, right? I mean, he's been a vocal advocate for mass murder for his entire political career, even back when he was married to Kimberly Guilfoyle, who's now a conservative. Along with the guy who ran the whorehouse out there in Vegas. That's a conservative. This conservatism ain't what it used to be. All right. So Gavin Newsom says mass murders become normalized. It's nice of Gavin to realize that his career has been successful, because it would appear that that's been one of the goals of his entire political career, has been to normalize mass murder. And when it comes to the murder of innocent children, nobody's even shocked anymore. Doesn't even shock people. Well, you can't be shocked. It's done so cleanly. People who don't do it properly are sometimes prosecuted. And they keep it all very clean and clinical. I mean, we're not going to have smokestacks where we're putting the people in the ovens and the and the and the ashes are raining down on the city. That's all very embarrassing. That's so 1941. They didn't even know how to kill people on an industrial level back then. Come on. We've got this down to a science now. So, and because it's so clean and clinical, there's no outrage, there's no outcry, there's, you know, virtually nobody cries for the innocent children who are being murdered, except their mothers. I mean, their mothers cry later, after they realize what they've done, they cry and drink and they do drugs and they do whatever they can to try to escape the awful, horrible thing they've done. One of the main reasons we should oppose abortion is because of what it does to the woman after she commits it. It's awful. It's horrible. It's horrible. But let's go back to the mass violence that you can see. That's at the, well, Las Vegas, at the synagogue, at the country music bar. This is all the mass violence that you can see when the blood actually spills out on the streets and is splattered all over the wall or drenches your best friend. That's the violence we can all see. And that seems to be not freaking people out as bad as it used to either. The Gun Violence Archive, which tracks mass shootings, they call a mass shooting any shooting in which at least four people were shot or killed. They say the Thousand Oaks barroom assault was the 307th mass shooting this year, meaning that a mass shooting takes place somewhere every day in America. I can already hear Tucker Carlson. I can already hear Sean Hannity. That's a gross exaggeration of mass shooting. These leftists, they just want us to think. So I would just say to my conservative talking head friends, so would 207, is that, what if it's only 107 mass shootings? That somehow makes it better? We know that these people are out to get our guns, but to deny that there's not a mass shooting almost every day in America is to be living in some sort of fantasy world where you'll want to say anything to defend your doxy, and you start to sound like a moron, Mr. Hannity, Mr. Carlson. Is there anybody else I missed? Oh, everybody just about on conservative talk radio. Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you for sticking with us, ladies and gentlemen, as we move into the domestic tranquility file, where the aforementioned Tucker Carlson, his home, the Antifa protesters showed up at his house. Yes, they gathered outside. Well, listen to this. The Post-Gazette, they say protesters gathered outside the home of Fox News host. Tucker Carlson. So there's a difference between protesters and what happened at Tucker Carlson's house. I've been a protester. I've been out there protesting. And never did I stand in front of someone's house chanting, we will fight, we will fight, we know where you sleep at night. And it was at night at Tucker Carlson's house. That's not protest. That is criminal terrorist threats. Yes. So Tucker Carlson was at work. His wife was at home. She says that they banged on her door. She had to lock herself in the pantry. And it's just terrifying, right? I mean, if you think about this, can you imagine have a crowd of masked people with clubs and bats standing outside your house? Saying, you must go, we will fight, we know where you sleep at night. I mean, that is terrifying. And I felt for Tucker Carlson's wife. I felt for Tucker Carlson. I'm not a big fan of Tuck. But I felt for him. That's got to be scary, having people show up at your house. Now, the Antifa group is called Smash Racism DC. And they were unapologetic about the whole event, writing on Facebook, "Fascists are vulnerable. Confront them at their homes." It's right in their house where they're supposed to be at peace, right? That's the one place in the world, no matter what we do during the day, no matter what confrontations and stress happen out there in the world, we all expect to be able to go home and enjoy some level of peace, quiet, and we're able to relax and be comfortable. But I don't know if Tucker Carlson's wife can ever be comfortable in her own house again. I don't know. I mean, once something like this happens. And, of course, the post goes on to tell us about how this is a pattern now. Back in June, Kirstjen Nielsen was heckled, basically run out of a Mexican restaurant. In September, the same Smash Racism DC shouted Ted Cruz and his wife out of a restaurant. Right, we've seen all these incidents happening lately with Republicans primarily being scared half to death by either masked or chanting or both. People with shoulder pads and helmets. It's terrifying. So whose fault is this? How do we come to this? How do we end up where you've got rioters in front of Tucker Carlson's house, for crying out loud? Well, let me try to explain to all you, including Tucker, how this came to be where we are. For a generation or two or three now, criminality has been made legal. Criminality. Things that used to be crimes for 4,000 or 5,000 years have been declared legal. And I'm talking specifically about murder. Murder has been legalized in America since the middle of the 20th century. It's been legal to murder innocent people. Adultery is legal, meaning sexual immorality is legal. Homosexuality is legal. Pornography is legal. Drug use and drug dealing and sell, it's legal. So over the course of the past three generations, all this lawlessness has been declared legal. And so you have basically enabled the criminal to declare himself as supreme. Here's the thing about criminals and about criminality. It can't just be tolerated and it can't just be legal. These are criminals. People who do criminal acts become more and more evil. It's well understood, simple human psychology. If you allow a sociopath to get away with sociopathic behavior, that sociopath is not going to get better. He's going to end up organizing Kristallnacht. He's going to be Adolf Hitler. So you've enabled the supremacy of the criminal element because this criminality has been affirmed or even celebrated by the likes, or at the very least tolerated, but quite often affirmed and even celebrated by the likes of Tucker Carlson, Ted Cruz, Kirstjen Nielsen, Sean Hannity. Is there anybody I missed? Oh, that's right, everybody who claims to be a conservative, they bow and scrape before the legality of all this criminal activity. And then, guess what, Tucker? It ends up at your door. The criminal ends up coming to your house demanding supremacy. And if the criminal's supremacy is not granted supremacy, Tucker, he's going to take it by force. And that means if he has to kill your wife and burn your house down to get it, that's what he's going to do. And he doesn't care if you tolerate and celebrate and affirm that he's nice and good. The fact that you're alive and that you proclaim to be a Christian man is a direct threat to them. And they will eliminate you, Mr. Carlson. So Tucker Carlson is partially to blame for what happened at his house. Obviously, the bulk of the blame and the criminal responsibility lies with the maniacs with the bats. And the bullhorns. And they should have been shot in the streets and killed. You shouldn't be able to do that without being shot and killed by the police. You show up at someone's house with a bat and say, we know where you sleep at night, the police should shoot you and kill you. Or at the very least, arrest and put them on trial. I suppose I have to be. No, they need to be shot. You can't have that. So we are living now in the age of, forget the white supremacist, forget the nationalist, as destructive as some of those ideas have been over the centuries. We're living in the age of the criminal supremacist, where the criminal has been elevated to be supreme. Criminal behavior is now esteemed above normalcy and legality. Criminality is almost worshipped in some sectors. Did you hear the women offering to give their ribs to Ruth Bader Ginsburg when she fell and cracked her ribs? I mean, that's worship. They worship the idea that they can murder their children. And they're so terrified that someone might stand up and tell them they're wrong. They say, we're willing to give her a rib. One woman said she'd donate both kidneys. Now, I don't think she really understood, because she's an ignorant, stupid person, that means she would die. I think she just is too stupid to know that. But some celebrity offered both kidneys to Ruth Bader Ginsburg. All right, so there we. So all right, I guess I can just move on. Deeper into the domestic tranquility file. CNN reports from Litchfield Park, Arizona. A grandfather told detectives that he and his 65-year-old wife, who have full custody of their grandson. They'd been after the grandson to clean up his room. He was being stubborn about it, and there was a bit of an argument that day. And later that afternoon, when they sat down in the living room to watch television, the grandson came up behind them and shot the grandmother in the back of the head. The grandfather claims he ran after his grandson, but then returned to help his wife. And then he heard a second gunshot, and the grandson had killed himself. The grandson, did I mention the grandson was 11? 11 years old. Okay, so just first of all, color me skeptical of the whole story with Grandpa. It's just something doesn't ring true. But no matter which way it goes, it's a horrifying family detonation. No matter which way, whether the grandfather killed them both or whether the 11-year-old, either way, it's just a horrifying family detonation. And yet another incident in which people have a common argument or problem, an issue between, and someone decides that murder is a legitimate problem-solving tactic. And so someone ends up dead. In this case, two people end up dead. I tried, by the way, this happened early in the week, early last week. I tried to research it to find out if there was any, because I don't believe the grandfather, frankly. I'll just say that. I don't believe it. But I tried to research it. There's been so many other murders just in the greater Phoenix area that nobody has time to report on this. Not even the local Litchfield Park, which is a subdivision, for crying out loud. Not even the local Litchfield Park paper had a word to say, because there were like three other murders that they were reporting on. The blood's been running so long and so deep that it's hard to even keep track of anymore. All right. Let's go. I'm over here, he said to his extremely attractive audio engineer, who's obviously so intrigued and mesmerized by the quality of the show that she doesn't realize that we're already over an hour. And we could just keep going, but we're going to have to end it. Why? Because we got to turn the boiler back on before everybody freezes. That's what we've got to do. All right, so should we end with this? I don't know if I want to end with this, but maybe. Let's just see how it goes. The Sun in the United Kingdom is reporting that Sao Paulo soccer star Daniel Correa Freitas. You remember him? You don't watch? He plays for the equivalent of the something league there. Well, he was found dead in a bush on October 27th with his throat slit and his genitals cut off. No, that was for real. Yeah, this was, it was right before Halloween, but it was, yeah, no, this was. So when I read this story back before Halloween, I suspected that perhaps adultery was a part of this story. With the whole genital mutilation thing, you know? Well, it turns out that a businessman named Edson Brites Jr. Has confessed to killing the 24-year-old football star in a moment of madness, he says, after he caught the man trying to rape his wife. Yeah. So I read that line and color me suspicious, right? I was like, well, I'm not sure if I buy that. I mean, I do believe that the businessman killed Sao Paulo football star Daniel Correa Freitas. That I believe. But the rape part I found somewhat suspicious. It turns out that the soccer player posted photos of himself with this guy's wife in bed on WhatsApp. So the whole rape story falls apart. But the thing is if adultery were illegal, the husband wouldn't have had to make up the story about the rape. And he might not have killed the guy if he'd have known that the guy could be prosecuted and punished for seducing his wife. But criminality is legal. This 24-year-old football star is free to seduce this guy's wife, and there's nothing this guy can do about it. So what happens? Well, the soccer player gets killed and mutilated. The soccer player, the 24-year-old, here's how the legalization of criminality affects a young 24-year-old. He was on WhatsApp bragging to his group of friends, posting pictures bragging about the fact that he was about to, you know what he was about to do with this guy's wife. He was bragging about it. Some of his friends warned him, you better be careful. Is he in the house? You might get yourself killed. Guess what? He got himself killed. So I guess that's it. I want to thank everybody for joining us. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, at AmericanRightToLife.com, and of course, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here in the Weekly Worldview Studios. Should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.